Hi, just before you listen to your 3CR podcast, a quick message. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. By becoming a regular donor, you can help us stay resilient and radical. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au. Thanks for listening and enjoy your podcast.
But you also had people that were very fine people.
Very fine people.
On both sides.
And the aliens would mind meld and give them the technology. They're bad aliens.
So
are you surprised the Nazis were influenced by demons?
No, if demons are real, I would definitely think they'd be on the side of the Nazis.
Yeah.
McDonald's is connected to the Clintons. They chop up the bodies and put them into the sausage and hamburgers. People are being cannibalized. Look it up.
And I'm watching CNN talk about this as violent white nationalist protests. We have done everything in our power to keep this peaceful, you know?
It's Pepe's become kind of a symbol.
Welcome to Yeah Nah Passeran, a show about fascism and its gravediggers. I'm Cam Smith.
I'm Andy Fleming.
And this week we're joined by, we're truly in the presence of a hero. It's Jason Wilson from war-ravaged Portland. How are you?
I'm okay. Keeping my head down, staying entrenched, keeping up the supplies of water and ammunition. Actually, I shouldn't make any jokes whatsoever about my preparation, should I?
No. You are right in the S hit, though. Are you okay? Is everything I'm seeing on TV true?
No. You'll be surprised to hear that it's not. Everything is totally fine and friends of mine in Portland are saying the same. There has been extremely localized protests and pretty well-behaved protests. I don't think there's been any arrests since July at the protests near the ICE detention center. So this is entirely a fantasy of the Trump administration, maybe built into a broader strategy of getting people used to having the military in the streets of major American cities, but there's really nothing that's true about the rationale. Maybe a traumatic right-wing memory of 2020 is playing out here, but there's nothing going on currently in Portland that approximates even what was going on in LA. And look, I'm not saying that people protesting around the country, I'm not presuming to pass commentaries on the tactics that anyone uses or what anyone's doing, but like, insofar as there was what we might broadly call disorder in LA or currently in Chicago, there's just nothing comparable going on in Portland. So, yeah, there's nothing to it.
Just for the benefit of any of our listeners who are not mainlining Fox News and perhaps don't have half a century of cocaine abuse cooking their brain, what does Trump think is happening in Portland?
It's difficult to say what he thinks is happening in Portland because of his very restricted, inflammatory, and I think highly curated by some of the people around him, media diet. So I seem to dimly recall that maybe something was doing the rounds about something that had happened in Portland, but maybe the video turned out to be from France or something like that. There's certainly been stuff on Twitter like that where people are posting riot footage that's supposedly from Portland, but it's actually France in 2022. I don't know if he's caught sight of that. Do you remember what exactly he thinks is going on?
I don't really know. One thing I do know is that the other day he posted about a news clip about med beds and
right.
A government was rolling them out that included AI footage of him announcing it. And I think in a very similar vein to the last question, do you think that that was a real news clip and that you just maybe don't remember that you announced it?
Yeah, I mean, let's hope so. Let's hope that there are med beds. I mean, the QAnon people famously think that these med beds are a miraculous medical technology that the US government possesses but has been concealing from people. The deep state has been concealing from people. And that announcement was an AI thing, of an AI-generated Trump announcing that they were real and that they were going to be available. I mean, the truth, of course, is that the Big Beautiful Bill, as it was called, is actually tearing lots of funding out of Medicare and Medicaid and Medicare in particular, the kinds of programs that actually allow folks on lower incomes or older people to access a limited form of publicly provided healthcare. That's the truth. The rural hospitals that depend on that income stream are going to be going out of business, especially now that there's a government shutdown. But I guess in the fantasy world of Trump's Truth Social timeline, he's actually unveiled and implemented some miracle technology. I think there's a real danger, a trap for young players in trying to get actually inside Trump's head, like whether he believes this, whether he thinks that his pronouncements as president give him the room to troll people and just, like, maybe he thinks it's funny. Maybe he doesn't know the difference anymore. Maybe it's just flooding the zone with nonsense. It's hard to say what the intention is. Maybe there isn't an intention that lasted any longer than like a second. There are pretty consistent reports that a personal assistant of his really is the gateway for what he sees, and maybe to an extent what he posts as well. Is it even Trump that's primarily the decision maker as to what's posted? It's just really hard to say, but it's kind of it's the more important question is whether people believe that stuff. I mean, since I last talked to you, just last week, in fact, we're getting this time stretch effect that we got during Trump 1, but just last week he was telling pregnant women not to take Tylenol because it causes autism. Like, the president was saying that. Now, will a lot of pregnant women not take Tylenol and therefore keep carrying a fever while they're pregnant, which is proven to be detrimental to growing fetuses? Who knows? But like, it's probably some people will, right? Probably some people think that the med beds are on the way. And then those people are just not thinking about the reality, right? That they or people they know won't have access to essential medical care anymore going forward. Yeah, so it's a very strange time, much stranger than the first Trump administration, I think, because Trump's alternate reality is really expanding and displacing, I think, reality itself.
Well, I'm a young player and they bloody trapped me. They got me good there, yeah. I have to say. I want to know what's going on in that noggin. I suspect it's probably not that much.
That's what I tend to think as well. Nothing sustained. You know what I mean? Nothing long-term.
Jason, one thing that the Donald has retained is a certain aversion to anti-fascism, which was dramatically proclaimed a week or two ago on the basis that there'd been a supposed rise in left-wing violence. It seems Portland may have been spared that violence of late. What do you make of the Trump administration's general noise-making around declaring Antifa a major terrorist organization?
Well, I mean, the bigger picture is it's quite funny that they're not even really concealing that they've been waiting around for a pretext to do this thing, right? I mean, there's nothing authentic or in the moment really about trying to pin this rash of shootings, assassinations on I don't know, the left or the radical left or the Democrats, which in Trump speak is all like the same thing, right? And there's no real difference in Trump rhetoric or the rhetoric of the people around him between the radical left, Antifa, whatever they mean by that. It seems to include the Democrats, right? So and it seems sometimes to just include anyone, Jimmy Kimmel or anyone who criticizes Donald Trump or his administration, right? And so the person who's accused of assassinating Charlie Kirk, and I mean, that's a whole can of worms we probably don't want to open about the nature of the evidence there and the nature of the federal law enforcement agencies that are investigating it and the imperatives they're operating under. But like, let's say this guy did it just for the sake of arguments. He's innocent till proven guilty. I mean, he has no connection to any organized left-wing groups. The people investigating that have backgrounded journalists to that effect. There's no connection between him and any radical left group or the Democratic Party. He seems to have much more solid personal connections to conservative politics, really, and the cultural conservatism of Utah and the American heartland. And to the extent, again, entertaining the idea that it actually is this person, to the extent that, and also granting that the communications that they say he made with others that they've released or that were in the charging documents are genuinely him, the extent of his connection to the left is I guess, opposition to Charlie Kirk's transphobic and maybe homophobic commentary, right? Like, that's it. all of the other guys, it seems to me, who have been involved in these recent shootings have nothing at all, have even less to do with the left. And some of them are obviously people on the right. But all of that has been characterized with a broad brush as left-wing violence. And also the accusation has been made that those criticizing the Trump administration, those pointing out the similarities between, say, ICE and various other secret police type agencies in the past, those even talking about these measures as authoritarian, are being blamed for somehow radicalizing these people into violence. And that's the context for Trump declaring Antifa a terrorist organization. Now, the complication there, I think, that probably listeners need to know about is that it's not even clear what that means, okay? I mean, Andy Ngo famously tried to sue Rose City Antifa about what happened to him at a protest in 2019, and the judge threw it out because there's no legal entity called Rose City Antifa, and there's no permanent structure, a bureaucracy of directors or officers. There's not really a legal organization there, and so there was nothing to be sued. Antifa in general, or anti-fascism, is something, an activity carried out by a broad range of actors. It describes an objective or a goal or an ideology. I mean, that's how I see it anyway. I'll probably defer to you guys on that, but certainly what he's prescribing is a terrorist organization. That's not clear. How he's prescribing it is, like, there's no legal basis for declaring any domestic organization in the US to be a terrorist organization. Terrorist designations are normally, or only ever in the past, have been made in respect of overseas organizations, and the legal force of that is that anyone, you know, providing material support to an overseas organization that's been declared a terrorist organization is breaking the law, right? And so a lot of people who maybe decided to go to Syria to fight for ISIS, or even provided money to ISIS, people have been prosecuted for making donations to organizations that were seen to be related to, maybe had organizational links to Hamas, groups like that. So that's what designating a terrorist organization generally means in US law. You're telling people in the United States that if you offer material support to this overseas organization, that then that's illegal. Within the US, I mean, having reported on the far right for a really long time, I know that the FBI, for example, in previous times has been quite constrained in a sense in the extent to which they can go after, say, white supremacist groups, because domestic actors and domestic organizations have First Amendment protection. And that protection tends to be interpreted quite broadly, at least in respect to far-right groups, by the FBI, right? And so they can only go after them at the point at which they've committed some kind of criminal offense. So it's mysterious, like, what he's actually done, or what he even thinks he's done in terms of declaring Antifa a terrorist organization. I mean, I think probably what he's done, in effect, is to let federal law enforcement, and beyond that, local, state law enforcement agencies, know that as far as he's concerned and his administration is concerned, they have really broad latitude, right, in going after enemies of the administration. And he's also publicly instructed his attorney general to prosecute prominent Democrats and also former FBI director James Comey, just because he sees them personally as enemies. So I think that's the big picture here. He's trying to nudge law enforcement agencies and individuals within law enforcement agencies into thinking, well, I've got open season and unlimited discretion when it comes to going after whatever, you know, the radical left or Antifa. So even though it's not clear what legal apparatus he's using here, it's not clear that there is an organization to actually proscribe, it's not clear that there's any shared infrastructure across groups that say they're anti-fascists. And actually, there's a fair bit of evidence that no such infrastructure exists and no such common organization exists. It's really about amplifying the discretion, and also nudging agencies in the direction of going after these groups and individuals within these groups. And again, that seems to include the Democrats. Maybe it includes Zohra Mamdani, right? Maybe it includes other more left-leaning candidates within the Democratic Party. It's hard to say, but like that's where agencies are being nudged, right?
I have to say, when I think of anti-fascists, the first word that comes to mind is not organisation. Jason, on the topic of, I guess, the rush to blame every shooting on left-wingers, I did see, and bearing in mind that we're recording this the night before it goes to air, and there may well be more mass shootings between now and when it does go to air. There was one last week, which was like just a Trump guy. This is back to business as usual, just a white guy who's clearly, he went to Iraq, got into his head that killing people was good. It seems fairly cut and dry thing. And I saw the Gateway Pundit try and paint that as like another Antifa one because he had a Trump sign next to a stop sign at his house. Yeah. And they're like, it says stop Trump. Well, actually, it said Trump stop. It was just wedged behind a sign. All of the other, he's wearing Trump shirts. He seems to love the guy.
This was the guy that shot up the Mormon church, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, just wait. I'm sure another one will come by fairly shortly that you could pin on the left. you don't have to try and squeeze them all in.
The way I see this is, I mean, you remember during Trump won, right? I mean, here's the thing. Donald Trump came along and he energized and maybe further radicalized and definitely offered a permission structure to the radical right, and the far right, okay? Like people were very excited by him. All kinds of ways of talking about immigration and women and people of color and Jews were suddenly back on the table, whereas particularly things like anti-Semitism and open anti-black racism, taboo in terms of the respectable political discourse, at least, okay? And what happened was that led to or was concurrent with social media breaking down a lot of barriers in terms of political discourse. And what happened during the first Trump administration was there was a string of racially motivated violent extremists, as the law enforcement knows them, right? I mean, white supremacist mass shooters. And there were those particularly horrible and egregious events in El Paso, Texas, at the Tree of Life Synagogue, and even in Christchurch. That was like also related to this flood of racist discourse in a sense that all of that had been somewhat empowered or energized by Trump. And that was a political problem for Trump. I mean, every other month he was having to explain how he was either being asked to distance himself from someone who had committed an act of egregious violence, distance himself from the events in Charlottesville, distance himself from mass shooters, or explain why this had nothing to do with him. And even if he wasn't personally being asked to do that, there was quite a lot of robust discussion in the media at that time about how all of these things were perhaps connected and that Donald Trump had ushered in this new regime of political violence. He had unleashed a wave of political violence. Now, I think during the Biden years, the right cottoned on to this a little and started to try to find ways to attribute these acts of political violence to the left, or if not the left, to associate it somehow with transgender individuals or with just the idea that people could be transgender, with transgender activists. And however slender the reed that they might put that on, they still tried it. Now I think that they've got such an overwhelming advantage on platforms like X. They have this very well-oiled media apparatus. They have a liberal media apparatus that's on its heels, an opposition party that seems to be barely functioning as an opposition party, which is also on its heels. So they have this enormous discursive power, freedom of movement, right? And I mean, they just reflexively blame it on the left. And even if it doesn't stick in the long term, even if it doesn't become part of the enduring public narrative of what actually happened, enough people make up their minds in the first moments after an event like that they probably do. They have bedded down. They unquestionably have bedded down the idea that the left is encouraging, promoting, indelibly associated with political violence. And it really doesn't matter, in a sense, who does the shooting, right? They're going to succeed, at least with some people in pinning it on the left. And that suits the administration's ends.
Jason, speaking of violence, it does appear that the genocide in Gaza and of Palestine is going to continue into the future unless Trump's new plan comes to fruition, whatever that might be. Do you think that the war or the genocide is impacting upon public opinion in the United States in a way that in any sense approximates the concerns over violence, political violence being expressed by the government?
I think that today is the day upon which Israel will be the most popular it will ever be. And the same goes for tomorrow and the next day. Israel's claim on public opinion in the United States is diminishing extremely quickly, including amongst Republicans, not as quickly among Republicans as it has among people who identify as Democrats or independents, but a sizable majority, basically public opinion on Israel has turned on its head over the length of this genocide. And Bibi Netanyahu is even less popular than Israel. And I think in polling I've seen, a plurality of Americans now see this as a genocide. And pluralities also, in some polls, do not believe that the United States should be supporting Israel to do the things it's doing. And I think that time is running out, really. For the support of Israel to be, like, eventually a majority of the people in the United States will see the United States support of Israel as illegitimate and as something that they don't like, they don't want their money spent on. Now, I think that's why you're seeing such a sense of urgency. I mean, it was interesting. The New York Post reported. So Candace Owens, I'm sure you're aware of. She's a far-right conspiracy theorist with an enormous YouTube audience, especially in recent weeks. Her videos have been getting 2-3 million views during the period where she has been essentially trying to blame Charlie Kirk's assassination on Israel or on supporters of Israel, right? And to say that the guy that they have has been framed and really to put out this narrative where Charlie Kirk was changing his mind about Israel, was maybe even going to convert to Catholicism. And the import of that is that evangelical Christians in the United States in particular have an eschatology, which involves the ingathering of all Jews to Israel, and followed by the death of 2/3 of them and the conversion of the rest to Christianity. An epochal battle. It's this insane belief that evangelical Christians have, but which explains a lot of Christian Zionism in the United States. But Catholics don't have that eschatology, and people like Candace Owens and Nick Fuentes on the far right are, I guess, see Catholicism as a form of Christianity that gels more easily with their particular brand of fascism. And that's not a commentary on what the Pope thinks or what most Catholics thinks, but it's a form of Christianity that doesn't have that doesn't necessitate Zionism, right? So she was claiming that he was changing his mind on Israel, that he was talking to priests, that he was all ready to convert to Catholicism and to start full-throatedly condemning Israel, that he was, some parts of her narrative appear to be true, that like late in his life, he was summoned by Bill Ackman, who's a billionaire and a strong supporter of Israel, and chewed out by Ackman about having Tucker Carlson and Dave Smith, who's a libertarian critic of Israel, speak at a Turning Point USA event. That much is true. All the rest, I'm not sure. The New York Post published a letter that Kirk had written to Benjamin Netanyahu in the last weeks of his life. And I think they published it as a gotcha to people like Candace Owens. Look, he was still very strongly pro-Israel. But if you look at it, if you look at the letter that they reproduced, he was really, he was saying pro-Israel things, but he was issuing a dire warning to Benjamin Netanyahu, which is that you have a huge PR problem. You're losing young people on the right. And he actually listed in dot points a whole range of things that he had been told by young people on the right. Israel is committing a genocide. I don't want my tax money funding Israel's genocide. Israel is a bad actor. And also some anti-Semitic stuff, which I'm sure you can imagine. But Israel has a huge problem. I don't think that presuming electoral politics continues in some recognizable form in the United States, I think we're going to get to the point very soon where support from AIPAC and pro-Israel lobbyists is going to be seen as maybe disqualifying for Democratic candidates entering primaries. You're seeing that amongst the more online parts of left-wing or pro-Democrat media now, people directly challenging people over they're receiving AIPAC money. So that's politics is gone altogether. The Republicans, it might take a little longer, but the younger Republicans are souring on Israel very quickly. And so, I mean, I guess I see what's happening now as Israel itself and the elements of the right in the United States that support Israel, and particularly the elements of the administration that support Israel, trying to get some new status quo that is both acceptable to Israel and somehow acceptable to public opinion in the United States throughout the West, in place before it's just too late. And I don't know. I mean, from what I've heard of the Trump plan, it sounds like once again, they're forgetting that the Palestinians are going to have some say in this. It seems like they're trying to, like with the Abraham Accords, stitch up a deal while forgetting that the Palestinians are going to have a say here. The Palestinians need to be satisfied as well. And of course, they're going to characterize any resistance or any disagreement from Palestinians as Hamas. But if it's not, and they're trying to excise Hamas from the process altogether, and they're trying to, it sounds like they're going to insist that Hamas not govern, that Hamas be completely cut out, and maybe they want to put some client government in charge in Gaza. But I mean, I don't know how long that is going to last. And I don't see that Israel, whether or not Benjamin Netanyahu is in charge, I mean, you look at public opinion in Israel, I think they're still going to want to ethnically cleanse Gaza and eventually the West Bank. I just don't. So I don't think it's going to satisfy Israelis either. So it's a tough one. And Donald Trump's fantasy world seems pretty impervious to these kinds of realities, and in any case, he's not generally trying to solve long-term problems. He's trying to get things out of the headlines, I think, is the best way I've come up with explaining why he does the things he does. But it doesn't seem like any of this is going to work to me. And it seems like another version of the two-state solutions idea that's been failing for 30 years, right? At least that long.
Well, it's not going to succeed with that attitude, Jason.
That's true. I should be more positive. I should be more positive. I mean, like, at least it's not. It seems like we've retreated from, on the plus side, we've retreated from turning it into, like, the Gold Coast or Dubai. On the negative side, it sounds like Tony Blair's going to be the satrap or whatever. I mean, I don't know why he's involved. That seems really strange to me. I don't know why.
Got a lot of expertise in that area, Jason.
I guess. I mean, and obviously his record of interventions in the Middle East is impeccable. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know that Palestinians would want to be governed by Tony Blair. But again, we're just not. Concerning ourselves with what they might think.
You've got to look on a larger scale. It's not just Tony Blair's record. The British have a great track record in the
well, region. Yeah, indeed. Yeah. I mean, I guess you can finish what Lord Balfour started, right?
Yeah. Well, we wish him all the best of luck. Jason, we'll have to leave it there.
Okay.
If people want to find you, we can find your articles on The Guardian, and you are, of course, on Blue Sky.
Yes, and the.news, the-end.news is my newsletter.
It sounds real cheery, mate. Incredibly yeah. Cheery title. All right, check out the-end.news. Jason, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Andy, that is our program. We'll be back next week. See you later.
See you then.
Awkward Giraffe presents the Festival of Critical Comedy 2025 on the weekend of the 29th and 30th of November. 2 p.m. to 8 at the Melbourne Unitarian Peace Church, 110 Grey Street, East Melbourne. Awkward Giraffe promotes comedy to make you think. Lineup includes comedy legends Greg Fleet and Nick Sun, and the groundbreaking Ridiculousness and Doppelgangster, and much more. Free entry. For more details, see awkwardgiraffe.net. Awkward Giraffe proudly supports 3CR.
Connecting Home is a safe space for survivors of the Stolen Generations and families to share stories and get support without judgment. We can help you learn about your rights and access compensation. We're here every step of the way. Every yarn is a step towards healing. Visit connectinghome.org.au or give us a call on 03 8679 0777.
A 3CR supporter.